world. All right, guys, coming up next to the stage, Andrew Bentley.
Yeah!
All right, I also did not write fan fiction proper. I did my usual thing, which is to drink a bunch of coffee and then start free associating like mad. So, One morning, Andrew Bentley awoke filled with an uncontainable, incontrovertible joy. Scarcely had the gauzy haze of sleep lifted from his eyes when he bolted from bed and sucked up the welcome air of a new day into his lungs. His healthy heart beat within his healthy chest, and its even rhythm soon merged harmoniously with his footfalls as he strode in determination from his room and once more out into a world defined only by its very lack of definition, boundless in possibility, clarion in purpose, and received without doubt, fear, or worry. No, I don't buy it either. One morning, Andrew Bentley awoke pinned in place by the sheer weight of his unsolicited existence. Balking beneath the pale and colorless light of a winter morning, he contorted himself in desperation, clawing at the torpor which hung in sheets from his brain like the web of some terrible arachnid. With intense concentration, basic mobility was restored, and he was thereby able to pour himself free of his bed, gain his feet, and begin running from his problems. But that's no better. Is the need to dramatize our own lives an innate phenomenon, or the eventual product of years of comparison between ourselves and the looming fetishes of our shared fiction? Or is our obsessive self-editorial a flight response, a desperate bid to distance ourselves from the inevitable homogeneity of Homo sapiens sapiens? Are we stretching ourselves towards mythical ideals or away from our 7 billion competitors? I'll dispel all anticipation right away and admit that I don't plan on providing any definitive answer. I was a sociology and acting major, and therefore I trade exclusively in summary, commentary, and replication. I'll leave the revelations on human nature where they belong, with philosophy and marketing students. See, the human condition is roughly like being stuck in the middle of a huge crowd without knowing why or where it's headed. As a sociology major, within this simile, I'm a tall person, which is also true outside of the simile, but only coincidentally. I'm tall, I can see a little farther around, get a slightly better idea of the big picture, but not much. And I'm an actor, so I guess I can do impressions of other people in the crowd, even ones who are way on the other side of the street. And as a writer, I can make tortured analogies about the situation instead of getting a real job. But I'm still there in the middle of the crowd, and the crowd is still a crowd and not whatever metaphor I'm trying to ascribe it, assuming, of course, we're speaking within the confines of the original simile. Outside of that, the crowd is not a crowd, but rather a complex intersection of physics and spirituality, which I honestly have no business trying to sum up in 5 minutes at a storytelling night, or indeed at all, which, if you'll recall, was the original thesis of this increasingly self-evident tangent. I hope that all wasn't too technical. Yeah. My point, operating under the admittedly suspect premise that I still have one, is that whether it's deprecation or aggrandizement, self-narrative is inherently given to distortion. We do it anyway because the unornamented truth is boring as shit. And worse yet, it's still an instrument of selective narrative. It's literally impossible to talk about yourself without advancing a paradigm, and it's impossible to live your life without contributing to one. So why should we care? Because so many of our narratives are not our own, even the ones we choose. When I was a child, no one told me how to feel at a funeral, nor was I affected by any loss, for I did not know the deceased, or humbled by my own mortality, for I didn't yet grasp the concept. My solemnity was entirely the product of imitation, not of the other funeral goers, but of funerals I had seen on TV or in film. My parents didn't need to tell me to wear black or be silent or to feel sorrowful. I received that instruction through cultural osmosis, adopting a dolor compatible with the mores inculcated in me by modern oral tradition. And just so we're clear, that was a good thing for a child. I'm not convinced it's good for us anymore. So much of our lives now seem dominated by the process of group sourcing our identities. Introspection has been appropriated by explication, And we need look no further than the carefully weeded gardens of our social media to see how. An introvert is no longer a descriptive appellation, but a proscriptive integral diagnosis, complete with symptoms and prognosis. We're all of us consumed by the need to distinguish ourselves, yet we seem compelled to accomplish this by sorting ourselves into an exhaustive array of clearly marked boxes. Here we sit, at a gathering predicated upon our common nerdiness, and here we sit in infinite variety of traits and thoughts and opinions, guaranteed no common ground or comity or love by the meaningless choice to adopt that mantle. People tell me sometimes that I'm not a nerd. Invariably, I'll tell them to trust me that I am. Well, don't trust me. Because what you perceive in me may be more than the pale generality contained in that word or any other thing I choose to tell you that I am. Don't let other people tell you what you are is old and solid advice, but don't try and tell other people what you are either. Just be it. Unless you're diabetic or something, there are times where that's relevant. That's not what I'm talking about. So here's my last attempt at a narrative, as honest as I can be, without inducing you to think of me as one way or another. One morning, Andrew Bentley awoke. Another morning, many years later, he did not. The time in between was, all things considered, a mixed bag. There. You see how fair I am? Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew. I hope we're all thinking about our mortality now. Let's just think about that. Let it sink in. We're all going to die. All right.